Hi, I'm Gretchen Anderson. I'm a member of the Home Health Section Education Committee of the American Physical Therapy Association. I want to welcome you to this podcast on homebound status. I have been a physical therapist for just about 26 years, and 16 of those years has been spent in home health care. I have been a clinician in the field for many years. I have been a rehab manager and rehab director, and most recently took a position as administrator of a home health agency. Throughout my time in home health, I have had an opportunity to fight several denials through the Medicare system and worked with administrative law judges on several denials and defending home health cases. Before we go into the podcast on homebound status, I just want to give a little disclaimer, and that is that these podcasts are intended to provide professionals with some guidance on a variety of confusing regulatory and practice issues. But please keep in mind that regulations change over time. Regulators issue updates, and some regulations, such as state practice acts, may trump other regulations. As a professional, it is your responsibility to familiarize yourself with regulatory resources and documents, making certain that you have accurate and current information. While we can help to familiarize you with regulatory references and rationales, you should always go to the regulatory source for clarification and the final word. Today's discussion is on understanding and documenting homebound status for Medicare. My objectives are that you will understand the Medicare regulations related to the meaning of homebound status, that you'll understand how and when to document homebound status, you will understand how to incorporate teaching with patients and families of homebound criteria, and we will review some real-life examples of some challenging situations as well. Now, in October of 2013, CMS decided to clarify homebound status. And this is per the CMS manual, Transmittal 172. Now, why the clarification? Well, according to CMS, they state, this instruction clarifies the definition of the patient as being confined to the home to more accurately reflect the definition as articulated at Section 1835 of the Social Security Act. In addition, vague terms, such as generally speaking, have been removed to ensure clear and specific requirements of the definition. They further state, this will prevent confusion, promote a clearer enforcement of the statute, and provide more definitive guidance to home health agencies in order to foster compliance. And I say I'm not sure that their attempt at clarification actually made things clear. There is a definition, before I go on to the one we have to follow, there is a definition provided to the beneficiaries. Now, this is from the official U.S. government booklet about home health benefits for people with original Medicare. And this is a Medicare publication that is provided to and made available to Medicare beneficiaries. And in this publication, it says, you must be homebound, and a doctor must certify that you're homebound. To be homebound means the following. There's a colon and then the following bullet points. Leaving your home isn't recommended because of your condition. Your condition keeps you from leaving home without help, such as using a wheelchair, walker, needing special transportation, or getting help from another person. And the final bullet point states, leaving home takes a considerable and taxing effort. Now, to me, that definition seems pretty clear. But that isn't the definition that we as providers follow. So the definition, the homebound definition in the Medicare Benefit Policy Manual, Chapter 7, is long, and I'm going to read it, so forgive me for reading, but it's the only way to get through it. It states, for a patient to be eligible to receive covered home health services under both Part A and Part B, the law requires that a physician certify in all cases that the patient is confined to his or her home. For purposes of this statute, an individual shall be considered confined to the home or homebound if the following two criteria are met. Criteria 1, the patient must either, because of illness or injury, need the aid of supportive devices such as crutches, canes, wheelchairs, and walkers, the use of special transportation, or the assistance of another person in order to leave their place of residence, or have a condition such that leaving his or her home is medically contraindicated. The homebound definition continues that if the patient meets one of the criteria 1 conditions, then the patient must also meet two additional requirements defined in Criteria 2 below. Criteria 2 is there must exist a normal inability to leave home, and leaving home must require a considerable and taxing effort. Now, before we try to piece apart that definition, they also have some information in there about whether or not a homebound person can leave the home. And the answer is yes, they can. People can still meet the homebound criteria and leave the home for medical purposes, including outpatient radiation and dialysis. They can attend adult day health care and still be considered homebound for receiving home health care. They can also leave for a family event, such as a wedding, funeral, graduations, reunion, that type of thing. The key is that it should be of short duration and that the patient continues to meet that homebound criteria that we just went through. Here's another long quote regarding the patient leaving the home from the manual. It is expected that in most instances, absences from the home that occur will be for the purpose of receiving health care treatment. However, occasional absences from the home for non-medical purposes, for example, an occasional trip to the barber, a walk around the block, or a drive, attendance at a family reunion, funeral, graduation, or other infrequent or unique event, would not necessitate a finding that the patient is not homebound if the absences are undertaken on an infrequent basis or are of a relatively short duration and do not indicate that the patient has the capacity to obtain the health care provided outside rather than in the home. That is from Chapter 7. So back to the clarification of the definition, which I can find to be quite confusing. For instance, what is normal inability? And how do we measure considerable and taxing? And the aid of a supportive device, special transportation, or assistance of another person? What are conditions that are medically contraindicated to leaving the home? These are some of the questions that people have after reading that definition or first coming into home health care. So we're going to start first with the easier criteria, which in my opinion is Criteria 1 because it's an either-or. Remember, Criteria 1 is one or the other of the following: assist of another person or assistive device. Well, that's very easy, especially for us therapists. Needing a device and or physical assistance is clearly understood and easy to document. The other option in Criteria 1 is it medically contraindicated. Examples of this are, is there an infection risk if they were to be leaving? Do they have specific precautions such as bed rest or limited activity? Are there psychological risks associated with the patient leaving home? Anxiety, fear. So that's Criteria 1, either assistance of another person or device or medically contraindicated. Now, Criteria 2 is not so straightforward. The beginning of Criteria 2, and remember, Criteria 2 is an and, they have to meet both. The beginning is normal inability, and frankly, I looked far and wide to find out a definition of normal inability and had a great deal of difficulty. The best I can come up with is that we can think of, is it normal for one of this condition to be confined to the home? Is it a normal inability for them to leave the home if they've had a recent stroke or a recent hip pinning? The other portion of Criteria 2 is the considerable and taxing effort. Many people question this. Does it mean maximum assistance is required? Or can it mean that the patient is just so fatigued upon returning home that they're so wiped out that they're unsafe with their ADLs? Or could it mean that they're too fatigued once they arrived at an outpatient clinic to benefit from it? It can mean any of these. Now, again, before we continue on to go more into detail on this, we have to figure out what counts as home. And this is also from Chapter 7, Transmittal 30.1.2. It states that a patient's residence is wherever he or she makes his or her home. This may be his or her home, own dwelling, an apartment, a relative's home, a home for the aged, or some other type of institution. However, an institution may not be considered a patient's residence if the institution meets the requirements of a hospital or a skilled nursing facility. Also, it's important to note that a patient may have more than one home, and the Medicare rules do not prohibit a patient from having one or more places of residence. I have experienced this where I've had patients going between two different children's homes. While the one child was working, they lived with this child, and then they would trade. The requirements of homebound status must be met, but they can have more than one home. So how do we document this? Do we document homebound status on initial visit? Absolutely we do. However, really, every note should convey homebound status. Now, ideally, this is conveyed through the documentation of your interventions, your notes, as well as a specific explanation to homebound status. I want to caution everybody to be very careful or leery of copy and paste options or pre-populated fields done at the beginning of care, because homebound status changes. As our patients change, the documentation should change to reflect how their status has changed and how they're still meeting homebound criteria. The copy and paste or pre-populated fields can get you in trouble because you'll have some very inconsistent documentation. It really should be clear to any person reviewing your documentation that your patient needs to receive care at home. You want to make sure to indicate the assistance needed to leave the home, and this could be through treatment notes of interventions as well as separate documentation of homebound status. You want to make sure that you indicate the barriers to leaving the home. Are there stairs? Can the patient transfer into a car without assistance? Can they walk community distances without undue fatigue? Do they have anxiety without the home mobility? Is patient confusion to the extent where patient needs assistance of another for community mobility? All of these things can come through easily in your notes as you discuss your treatments with them. Whenever possible, you want to use tests and measures, standardized tests and measures, to support homebound status, to support whether the patient can function at community levels. Are they a fall risk by the timed up and go or the Tinetti, the Berg, dynamic gait index? Is their gait speed safe for the community? Can they traverse varied terrain? Can the patient ambulate sufficient distances for the community? Can they do these things safely? Other reasons, other than physical reasons, that a person might be homebound, their cognition. Are homebound due to cognitive reasons often? Are they safe to be out in the community without assistance? What about the infection risks? Do they have open wounds or very compromised medical status where they shouldn't be exposed to the community? They have psychiatric issues, severe anxieties or phobias. These also can be reasons to support homebound status. Other thing you want to consider is your OASIS. You want to keep in mind how you're correctly scoring the OASIS items, and that when we're doing the OASIS, our scores reflect safety with tasks and what assistance the patient should have with them, not necessarily what they choose to do, but what they should have to be safe. Now, if you're scoring a patient with a zero on M1850, which is transfers, or M1860 with ambulation, then you're basically saying they're safe and independent with these skills. Homebound status might and should be questioned if we're stating that they're safe to ambulate on varied surfaces with no device and no assistance. Now, in a case like that, there must be documentation present to support other reasons for the patient's homebound status, such as the infection risk, the doctor's orders, the severe anxiety issues. Now, what happens when your patients go out of the home for non-acceptable reasons? Do we need to discharge the patient as soon as we hear that they went shopping or to a restaurant? I would say you should investigate the effects of that outing. Now, if they say, it was great, and tomorrow we're going to the movies, or did they say, I was so exhausted from grocery shopping that I couldn't even take a bath? You can use the experiences to support homebound if they were very fatigued. It's okay to document this. Use this as education to the patient of their limitations and of their safety. Now, what about driving? If you discover your patient is driving, does that mean it's an automatic discharge? Does that mean they're non-homebound? Really, the question is not if the patient is driving, but whether or not the patient should be driving. Are they driving because it's the only way to get their food or their medicine? Are they driving but they're unsafe while doing so, or unsafe to be walking to and from the car on their own? Remember the criteria. Is it a considerable and taxing effort? Do they need the device of Do they need assistance or the device of a device or another person to be safe? Do they have contraindications to being out of the home? These determine homebound status. Not what they do, but if they should do it. So do our patients choose to be homebound? No, they don't. Patients meet a criteria of being homebound or they don't. It is not a patient choice issue. If a patient should not be going out due to safety, contraindications, etc., but are going out into the community anyway, that doesn't change the definition. It may change our course of action and require discharge due to schedule challenges, but don't confuse that with whether or not it's meeting the criteria. You can educate the patient to the risks, you can get the physician and the family involved, and continue to see the patient in the home if they meet homebound criteria. Do patients become homebound because they promise not to go out? Again, patients do not choose to be homebound. If they could go out without assistance or without taxing effort, they do not become homebound simply because they want to stay home and they agree to stay home. The criteria dictate homebound status, not the patient. Also, the inability to drive does not come into play. What matters is if a patient can go with others or utilize public transportation. So what about those that are going out against medical advice? Well, very similar to what I was just saying. If they meet the homebound definition, but they still choose to go out of the home, they're taking a risk, and they're not changing the criteria. If a patient goes out against advice, but still meets criteria, you need to educate the patient to the risks of going out. Get the family, the caregivers involved. Explore the reasons for going out. It's okay to document these things. It actually demonstrates teaching and why and how the patient is homebound. Now, the eventual result may be that you end up discharging this patient due to noncompliance or scheduling challenges, but not because the patient isn't meeting the homebound criteria. So homebound, there's a definition. Follow it. You want to documentation should be with every visit that supports homebound status. Use objective terms and measures to communicate homebound to the reader of your notes. Remember that patients do not choose to be or not to be homebound. If you think a patient could go to outpatient therapy and not suffer medically or psychologically, it may be difficult to support homebound status and it's time to transition them out of the home. Use of the Home Health Advanced Beneficiary Notice of non-coverage form, the new form, can help to educate the patient to the options if they want to continue with therapy in the home, even when they're not meeting criteria. We have a couple of real-life examples for you here. Now, I had this patient. He was my patient. He had a history of CVA with resultant hemiparesis that affected one side, arm, and leg pretty significantly. He had just come home from an inpatient stay for a total knee replacement on the opposite side. His CVA was an old CVA, and this was a new total knee. He lived alone in a split-level home, and stairs were necessary to go in or out of the home or to access the laundry or the lower level of the home. This patient was unsafe on stairs, even with assistance, and he should have had supervision for all ambulation. This patient was leaving home anyway. He was walking down his stairs, walking out to his driveway, and driving his truck. So what should we have done? It was quite the dilemma. Explore why he was leaving. He was actually leaving to get food and medicine. Well, then we need to explore our options. Could we add services of a social worker? Could we provide help in the home? We needed to inform the physician and family of the risks that this patient was taking and his behaviors. We may have had to discharge the patient if the patient left the home so much that we couldn't even schedule visits. But the point is, he still was homebound. So how would we document in this case? Well, we want to make sure that the deficits come through in the daily charting, which should be easy, as the focus of his treatment was likely on gait, it was on range of motion, it was on stairs, it was on safe mobility. Remember, when you're scoring an OASIS on a person like this who lives alone and does everything on his own, you should be scoring on what is the best fit score for the patient to be safe with that activity, not what he was doing. So you wouldn't want to give this gentleman an independent in his ambulation because he wasn't safe to be doing that. You also want to make sure that you document on the assistive devices used. Should you mention the driving in your documentation? I say yes. You can mention it because you want to document teaching to safety, teaching to contact with the physician, the family, the reasons that he was going out, your safety concerns, your referral to the social worker, and why. You want to document concerns, but also reasons why therapy in the home is needed. Again, his stairs, his safety, his fatigue if he's to go out. These all support homebound status. Now, another dilemma that we've had, and this is another patient of mine, is this patient was relatively young for a home health population. She was, I think, in her 50s, had severe respiratory dysfunction, questionable mononucleosis, and a very complex medical history. This patient was independent in the home. She was not a fall risk by the timed up and go or the Tinetti. She did not use an assistive device, but required several rest breaks when doing any activity due to shortness of breath and fatigue. She had a home program for strengthening and activity tolerance. The goals were for her to be able to take a walk with her dog to the park, very, very nearby, twice a day. Now, was she homebound? Yes, she was homebound, as she does not have tolerance for activities outside. She does not have the tolerance for safe community mobility, and she would be way too fatigued for outpatient therapy if she were to get there. However, in this case, there was a different dilemma, and in this case, the dilemma is that the patient was pretty much independent in her home program, and her need for skilled physical therapy is what should have been the question. Now, with her, she had too much fear to ambulate to the park on her own. She did need guidance to monitor signs and symptoms of fatigue and overwork. She also happened to be a managed care patient, and insurance gave us authorization for visits to continue into another certification period, but at a less intense rate of therapy visits. This patient did go on to develop a bladder and a kidney infection just after this dilemma period of doing the research, and she had a decline in her abilities. And PT stayed focused on teaching her pacing and activities and outdoor mobility skills. I bring up her just because she was very independent, but she still met the homebound criteria because of the considerable and taxing effort that it would have taken for her to participate in any sort of outpatient strengthening program. And then here's the final scenario that I have here, which is a 66-year-old male with a history of gait instability, alcoholism, and a recent GI bleed. This patient lived alone with no family in the area. He's been walking outside daily to the corner store to buy food using his walker. He's had no falls, but a few close calls. He also took a community bus to a physician's appointment, but he declined to visit the very next day due to fatigue. So is he homebound? Yes, I think it's pretty clear that he's homebound, but how to address this in the chart was the concern of some of the clinicians. The patient clearly needs PT for safe mobility when he's out. He's had close calls. You want to document the close calls. Use tests and measures to look at community mobility, safety, activity tolerance. The focus of treatment for PT should be to improve these skills and make it easier and safer for him to do these activities. Obviously, in the meantime, we need to explore options for him to get help in the home through community resources, social work, etc., so he doesn't have to walk to the corner store. I hope that this presentation has helped to clarify the trickiness of the homebound status, its recent clarification of the government, and how and when to document home health. Thank you for your time.